You're listening to DottoTech, helping you get the most out of your technology wherever you use it, at home, at school, or at work. Brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. 20 years, the trusted voice of technology in Canada, Steve Dotto.
Hello and welcome to DottoTech. I'm Steve Dotto and I am glad you're joining us this fine Wednesday evening here in early July. Oh, Art. What a week. What a week we're having.
I'm very excited. This is the most guests we've ever had.
We have a plethora of guests. We have guests of all ages in studio with us right now. The topic today is mommy bloggers and daddy bloggers. We're going to be talking to mommy bloggers, and I should have done some of those verbal exercises before the show began today. Mommy bloggers and daddy bloggers. But because of the nature of bringing in mommy bloggers and daddy bloggers, they're bringing their kids in with them. So we've got a studio full of youngins as well, and Art's babysitting over there. Oh, somebody's got their finger up Art's nose. This could be tragic.
I do charge by the hour, so we should make this quick.
Okay, let's make it quick. That's good. And Art, and he also does parties, so he'll come and do. Are you going to do some balloons?
We'll see.
Okay,
they do cost extra.
Okay, extra for the balloons. Good stuff. Well, let's introduce our guests right off the top. We got Rebecca Coleman joining us, and she is at RebeccaColeman.ca. Hi, Rebecca.
Hey, Steve.
Thanks for coming in. Now, Rebecca doesn't like to be classified as a mommy blogger. She doesn't like slots. She doesn't like labels. You're a blogger who happens to be a mommy.
I was recently nominated or chosen as one of the top 30 mom bloggers in Vancouver by VancouverMom.ca, and that was really great. But when Amber sent me the email, I emailed her back, and I was like, are you sure this wasn't a mistake? Because I'm not a mommy. I'm a mom, and I'm a blogger. But I don't often talk about my son on my blog.
Okay.
But I do a little, but not...
You give us that nice perspective of a kind of an adult version of a mom blogger.
Yes.
That's not... Because on the other end of the spectrum, we do have Ashel, Ashel Westwood, who is a... You are happy to call yourself a mommy blogger, right, Ashel?
Yeah, definitely. I'm very much... was definitely the beginning of my blogging journey was being a mom.
So and also just the name of your blog, mumfection.com, that kind of tells us the word mum is right up there.
Yeah, definitely.
And now, how old are your kids?
I have a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old.
And Rebecca?
My son is 10.
10. 10. So that is the female side of the mommy bloggers, daddy bloggers lineup here. On the daddy side of that, we have Rick Davidson, who, again, kind of a unique blogger because you don't really have a blog. But you're a daddy blogger.
I have a Facebook page.
Which you use as a blog.
Yeah, that's what the kids are doing nowadays.
It's what the youngins are doing.
That's what I heard, yeah.
Well, it's awesome. And you're also a cartoonist of some limited skill.
Terrible, terrible skill.
Yes, yeah, and so you do stick figures that identify all your... is great for Facebook.
Yeah, absolutely. And it helps keep my family anonymous. So, you know, when I walked in, you didn't recognize me.
I didn't, because I only seen the stick figure of you. Yeah. So, and now it's harder, though, to get people to find, because you don't have a nice little catchy URL. So you're at facebook.com/workfromhomewarrior.
Yeah, and you know, being a new dad, so my daughter's 14 months, it makes me feel like a bit of a warrior, like I'm out to battle every single day, and parents out there will understand, you know, it's poop, and it's pee, and it's all those kind of things that you don't really talk about in public.
Yeah.
Or on the radio.
You just did on public and on the radio, but that's... and you do work from home.
I do work from home.
That's it, hence the work from home warrior.
Absolutely.
And finally, the one that actually got this ball rolling, Ricky Sheedy. Shetty?
Yeah, like the knife, machete.
Ricky Sheedy, good guy. And Ricky has daddyblogger.ca. So you went full Monty for the blogging thing. You said, I am a daddy blogger.
Yeah, I even have the URL, daddyblogger.ca.
Which is awesome. And you have a book. You have the book. And you also have the wee child in your lap who is now making an unbelievable mess of the studio table. But that's okay. So we might hear occasionally from Rianne, is it?
Yeah, my daughter's name is Rianne. It's a combination of Ricky and Anne, Rianne.
Okay, hi, Rianne. She's very cute. Wish you could see these cheeks. These cheeks are just... It's a good thing you don't have Italian grandparents, child, I'm saying, because right now your cheeks would be just handfuls of ants grabbing them. They do that an awful lot. So the topic, as I mentioned, is going to be mommy bloggers and daddy bloggers. And mommy bloggers was really the first phenomenon where the power of women getting out and just talking about things that were important to them, marketers started to recognize that there was this growing movement of this growing undercurrent of communication, this channel of communication that they could tie into. And the mommy bloggers really kind of became a phenomenon. Really, about 5 years ago, I guess, was when they really, really took off. And then, of course, the daddies are a little slower to the mark, but we're catching up a little bit. So I got to ask you first, and let's begin with you, Rick, because you are the newest. You're probably the newest
freshest
blogger in the thing. Because did you just start blogging when you had your child?
You know what? For me, it's only been a few months.
Okay.
And for me, it's entertainment. My goal is to entertain people out there and just create something that's goofy and funny and interesting. And it's all about me trying to just survive being a dad.
So what did you do before? Or what do you do?
So I've been working in the video game industry for a number of years.
Okay. So you have a technology background to a certain extent.
Yes.
Yeah. And so you started. And so the whole idea for you was just to share.
Just to entertain. And, you know, I firmly believe that if you've got something that people are interested in, then it'll grow and people talk about it and it'll take off. So that's why I'm on Facebook as opposed to on my own blog, is to find out what works and what people like.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you... right on
cue. That's not
cue,
me, by the way.
That isn't you, but it's a sound that we're all used to. I don't think she wants the coconut. I think she wants... Give her the kangaroo. It's Sophie the giraffe. Okay. So now, is this... Are you planning on this communication channel, because you're gathering followers, are you planning on turning it into a business?
Yes, I am.
And so you're looking at monetizing.
I'm a big fan of Seth Godin. I'm not sure how Canadian.
I love that man.
Yeah, he's fantastic.
I adore him.
And his whole mantra is just put something out that's of value and then figure out what's going on later on. That's my interpretation of it. So I'm putting it out there and people let me know this stuff I really dig and this stuff I really don't dig. And then when I've got the formula, I'll get it out there and get a big push.
So you're gonna be looking. And that's where I actually first noticed Ashelle. Ashelle was speaking at Northern Voice about the business side of mommy blogging. And Ashelle, it's something that now was it just happenstance that you happened to talk about it a lot, or is your blog a really going concern business wise as far as you're concerned?
Well, it's definitely a confirmed business. I mean, it gives me a large amount of my income monthly, so I definitely consider it a business, but it definitely fell in my lap too, so I have both sides of that.
So let me ask you the same question. What got you started?
Well, I was pregnant at home with my second son, and I was basically, like every other pregnant mom, I was stir crazy and lonely, and I'm especially young too on top of it, so I don't have as many mom friends in my immediate circle, so I've definitely used it as a support system and a way to outreach to other moms and connect with other people, and it really worked out nicely for me.
So for you, the first thing was getting adult communication, sharing the catharsis of complaining or being excited about something, giving you an avenue to share that stuff.
Yeah, especially in a mom like type venue, because I have young friends, of course, but they're not moms, and because I'm only 25.
Okay. Already 25 and two kids. Holy cow. That's
I'm especially young.
Good. Now, when did you cross that threshold of, or did the light bulb go off that, wait a minute, this isn't just a hobby, this can be a business too?
Oh, that would definitely be my first PR email or my first email asking, we would love you to have this product and test it out. We'd love to offer you this amount of money, blah, 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 blah. And it just exploded from there. Light bulb went off in my head, and I'm like, I could do this in my pajamas at home with my kids.
So somebody wrote to you and said, we will give you money if you'll talk about our product.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that happens all the time.
That's a good day. Well, I guess, yeah, that's a good day.
Yeah, it is a really good day when you find out, yeah, I can make money at home in my pajamas.
Writing. Let's keep it all above board. Writing. Yeah. Yes, writing about things.
Right.
So Rebecca, you blog on all topics.
I have two different blogs. Mm-hmm. I have a marketing blog. I started my marketing blog 6 years ago when I launched my business full time. Basically what happened was I became a single parent 6 years ago. And I have been doing publicity on sort of a part-time hobby basis up until that time. And when I became a single parent, I started thinking, I need to be self-employed. I need to figure out a way that I can work my schedule around my son's schedule with his school. How can I make that work?
Mm-hmm.
And so I I launched a full-time, basically I do freelance publicity, that mm-hmm. kind of stuff. And I launched my blog as a marketing technique, essentially, for my new business. And so what I did was I shared marketing techniques and tips and tricks and that kind of stuff on my blog. Over the years, it's morphed into something more. Now I share a lot more about, I talk a lot about social media. So now I do a lot of work with social media. I teach at BCIT. I'm often talking to people and teaching them about how to use social media as a small business. Mm-hmm. And then a couple of years ago, I started thinking, oh, this is like so much work. So instead of doing less blogging, I started doing more blogging, and I started a personal blog, which is like a cooking blog.
Okay.
And it's called Cooking by Laptop, and it's just fun. I get in the kitchen. Like, the kitchen is sort of my creative place where I can get in there and I can have fun and create new recipes and stuff like that. And so that's often the place where I will sometimes pull in stuff about my son. So for example, you know, we go to Steveston in the fall to the pumpkin patch, and I'll blog about that and then also include a recipe that has something to do with pumpkin or something okay. like that. So that's sort of how I, yeah, that.
So you're almost the opposite of the direction of the others. You had a blog which was all about business, was about making money, and then you needed a release.
Yeah.
And so you started your second blog, which is, I imagine you're less concerned with its commercial success and more concerned with the dialogue that it creates.
It's more for fun, really, more than anything else. But the really interesting thing for me that I've been learning a lot over the last, particularly over the last couple of months, is that I really feel that my blog has been... I sort of hide behind my blog. Like I won't be super, super personal on my blog. What I'm finding is that over the last couple of months, the more personal I have become and the more I've revealed of myself, the more accepted in a way that I've been. So it's almost like the more afraid I am to put myself out there, when I put myself out there, the reaction that I get from people when I put myself out there is so warm.
It's accepting.
That I'm like, wow, okay, maybe it's okay for me to be more personal and to put myself out there.
Be careful about getting too comfortable with this, because I'm sure there's a threshold.
Yeah.
And oversharing does happen.
For sure.
Our last blogger here in the room is Ricky. And Ricky, you definitely are compromising your privacy an awful lot. Your daddyblogger.ca is all, there's pictures of your daughter on it. It's you. What got you started?
When I became a dad, I was looking for resources for dads. There's not many books, not many blogs, not many websites. So I couldn't find any, so I basically created one. So I've been blogging for about 6 months continuously now, since December 1st. And I write about parenting, and especially from a father's perspective. So.
And you are you corrected me. I called you a stay-at-home dad, but you're calling it a work-at-home dad. You dads that live at home don't like being called stay-at-home dads. You like being called work-at-home dads.
Yeah, I think there's a negative stereotype of word stay-at-home dads. And for me, I'm still driven to make income, even though I'm doing the blog. And I do spend a lot of time with my daughter. I think it's almost an innate nature to make income. I don't know if it's just a guy thing or a pride thing, but so I do make income through my blog, and I just released a book as well, so through the book sales.
So when you started the blog, were you planning on it being a business from day one as well?
Yeah, I guess my background is more entrepreneurial. I used to be an event planner, and I was involved with a few different businesses. So when I started the blog, it was also natural to start as a business as well. So I have advertising revenue and sponsored posts as well.
Okay.
And then, creating my own products as well to sell.
Ricky's blog is at daddyblogger.ca. We also have with us Rebecca Coleman. We have Rick Davidson and Nichelle Westwood. We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to talk about what is life like having a blog, how it affects your family, and whether oversharing can happen. And also, I'm intrigued by the business side. I think you can tell by my line of questioning so far. But we're going to return with more Dottotech in just
a few
seconds.
Visit our website at Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Contact us. Nobody does it better. Dottotech is brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Now, back to Steve.
We are chatting with mommy bloggers, we are chatting with daddy bloggers, and we have children that are the subject of blogs running amok about the Dottotech studio this fine Wednesday evening. We have Rebecca Coleman, Rick Shetty, we have Rick Davidson and Nichelle Westwood, all bloggers of some note and excellent reputation, I might add, all joining us. So thanks you all for coming out. I do appreciate this so much. I got a question for you all. One of the natures of being a parent blogger is sharing stories, personal stories. And is it a concern? How do your significant others feel about it? And I'm going to start with you, Rebecca, because I'm asking, how does your ex feel about it?
I hope he's not listening. I think it's all okay. I very much live my life out on social media. Mm. I very much do. I'm on Foursquare. I'm on Twitter. I'm on Facebook. I blog. I live a life very much out there. I've not had any negative experiences yet to this day.
Do you have a big filter that you everything goes through before you share it, or have you ever gone back and said, oh, maybe I shouldn't have?
I sort of have two rules. My two rules are never talk about poop or never post while drinking.
They're my two rules of what I should do.
I know. I was just going to say, however, I've actually broken both of those rules.
Right.
I don't know. Yeah. It's a tough one. I clearly would never. I mean, I think when I talk about stuff that's about me, it's about me. If I get myself in trouble, I deserve it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, my big concern would be if anything happened that would negatively impact my son. Obviously, mm-hmm. that would be a really bad thing, you mm-hmm. know? So I think that's my sort of biggest concern, you know?
You know, the one of the things, I grew up with the, I didn't grow up, I used to work with a young man whose mother was a very famous cartoonist, and he was the subject of one of her cartoons.
Yes.
A series
of cartoons.
I know
exactly who you're talking
about.
Yeah,
and it affected his life, not necessarily always in a positive way.
Right.
And being kind of out there in public.
You're that limb.
Yeah, it's exactly. And so I always wonder, you know, if we're seeking fame or, not necessarily seeking fame, but we're seeking success in our blogs, which means that they're going to grow in popularity. It means that we're basically drafting our kids and putting them out front.
He's funny. He'll do things like he asks me, he's like, oh, can I get a Facebook account? Can I get this? Can I get that?
This is your son.
And my son. And he doesn't have any of those things. I've said no to him so far. But he'll say things to me like, we'll be someplace and he'll be like, take a picture of me and put it on Facebook. And, you know, I don't mind doing that because for me, what social media has been is it's been a really amazing way to stay in touch with people. So, for example, my son's grandparents live away. They don't live here. And so one of the things I love about Facebook is that I'm able to communicate stuff to them immediately. I take a picture, I put it on Facebook. They know what we're doing that day. They can see, they're very much involved in our lives, even though they don't live nearby. Yeah. And I think social media has been so amazing for that.
Rick, as your newborn is here, how did your spouse feel about you deciding that you're going to share your life with the with the world?
Well, originally I was all about YouTube videos and I wanted to make her famous, you know, falling over or getting up to antics. And my wife wasn't as cool with that.
Okay.
So I ended up writing about it and drawing it as opposed to having pictures of ourselves up there. And she's totally fine with that.
Because you become caricatures as opposed to real
Absolutely.
People.
Yeah. And most of what I talk about is, I'd say, 80% truth and 20% embellishment.
And she's cool with
that. She laughs. Yeah, she has a good time laughing.
At this point, she laughs.
Yeah.
You might still be in the honeymoon phase of this entire thing.
I think I am.
Yeah.
Yeah, it could backfire. But at the moment, she's supportive of it. She likes it. She has a good time.
Okay, and Ricky?
You know, for me, even when we were dating, I was really public about everything, and I did this big proposal at the airport, a big flash mob proposal.
I was just going to say, you asked her to marry you in a very, public way.
Yeah, and it made the front page of the province and all that, so some of your readers might have, listeners might have heard of that story. So I was really public anyway when we were dating, when we were engaged, and when we got married, so I think it was just natural that when I became a parent, I was going to be public as well. One of the benefits of, you know, sharing all this stuff is my wife's parent family is in the Philippines.
Okay.
So they get to kind of see our whole life, you know, without being here.
Yes, and realizing that their son-in-law is somewhat out there, as you say.
Yes, exactly. So they've accepted me as part of the family as someone outgoing. And my wife's quite opposite. She's a little bit more introverted.
Okay.
Yeah. But
she's very
open about. She's very open about my blog and all.
Shell, since you kind of grew into it, was there a point where you had to have a conversation with your significant other about what was happening?
Well, he knew what I was doing right from the get-go, and he's definitely very supportive of what I'm doing. He's not terribly supportive of his face being on my blog.
Uh-huh.
He has a very big photo aversion, so he always thinks he looks terrible, but he's okay with it for the most part. And my kids love it. They know all the friends that I have. They know they're bloggers. They're like, oh, you're going to a blogger event. They know all about it, and they love being in it. Force me to take pictures just like Rebecca's son.
Oh, okay.
So, but I don't put their names up directly on my blog. I'll call them eldest and youngest.
Got it. So what does success look like for a mommy or a daddy blogger? Is there a number that you do set yourself goals as far as how many followers you have and how much growth you have, and how much do you measure your clout score on an ongoing basis to see exactly how much impact you're having, Ishelle?
I think I definitely kind of obsess over my numbers a little bit too much, but I don't like dwell on it or compare myself to other bloggers. Every mom blogger has a different form of success. That mom blogger might think she's ultimately successful. She has a book, or, you know, she ended up on a TV thing. You know, it all varies between the person. So I think I always just strive for more.
Okay. But you check your subscriptions all the time.
Yeah, I'm pretty bad about that.
Okay. What about you? Because you're in Facebook, it's a little bit of a different form because you don't have the same engagement with followers. You get likes, so you're seeking to get those likes, and then Facebook, of course. Actually, you're in a really challenging place if you think about it, because Facebook also tries to charge you every time that you want to make sure that your posts get seen by most of your followers. So.
Yeah, you know what? Facebook has a lot of tools.
Sorry?
Facebook has a lot of tools, I think, that are really powerful. You can see how many people are participating. There's a lot of conversation that's going on. It's very, very spreadable, very viral.
Yeah, you've got that going for you. But you also have a lot less control about the initial distribution.
I think, for me, I feel there's a lot more control because I've got a lot of friends on Facebook and my friends have a lot of friends. So I can see that viral spread very quickly. Whereas if I have a blog, no one knows about it until I tell them, and I have to advertise to tell them, or I have to get someone else who is very popular to talk about my site. So I find Facebook really easy as an initial give it a push. And then when it gets a medium level of success, then I can transform that into some other medium, such as a traditional website.
And are you going to play that by ear?
Yeah, I am.
Oh, okay.
My end game in this is not to monetize through ads or through product placement as I go. I'm building up content so that I can write a book or that I can get some sort of deal and use the content and do something more than just have the site in and of itself. That's my end game, is to get popularity and have following. And
so your field of dreams right now, if you're building it and hoping they'll come.
Yeah, I want to be a Gary Larson. I want to be the next Far Side and create that sort of series that parents really enjoy, and they can laugh at me and what I get up to with my family.
Okay, Ricky, how about you? Do you follow your numbers really closely?
Yeah, I mean, I have an app on my phone so I can look at the numbers. Probably for the first 6 months, that was my focus, to build up the readership, you know, in terms of like the Google, the SEO, social media, all my platforms.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, I'm doing it, Ian, if I impact one person, I think it's worth it for me. Like just yesterday, actually, someone on Facebook messaged me and saying, guess what? I've just become a dad. I'm 19 years old, and I don't know who to turn to. Can I talk to you?
Mm. Oh.
And just stories like that make it worth it to me. Worth it, worthwhile. Like, you know, even if just that person gets impacted, doesn't matter if there's like 5,000 or 10,000 other people.
Yeah. So So you're finding that's the beauty of the whole social media world, is in the online world, is that you have this massive, massive reach where you're reaching hundreds or thousands or tens of thousands of people. But it's those personal connections that you get out of it that pay you back more than money often. And so obviously it means a lot to you to get a call like that. And it means you're doing some good. It means that you can do some good out of it, which is.
Yes, absolutely. Ian, one of my goals with the blog is like my mission statement is to change the world. One dad at a time.
Okay.
Yeah. So I have a global, you know, mission.
You have a global mission.
But I'm acting locally.
There you go. So we're short on time as far as this goes, but I'm going to let each of you have one line. What is one piece of advice you would give to aspiring blogger? And I'm going to start with Rebecca.
It's a marathon, not a sprint. I think a lot of people think, I'm going to get a blog and I'm going to monetize my blog and I'm going to be rich overnight. And it's not, it doesn't work that way. It's a lot of work. It's really hard work. You have to really put a lot of energy into it. You have to put a lot of effort into it. You have to be really committed to it.
And you have to, can I paraphrase and say, you have to find joy in the work?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's really important. I think for a lot of people, if you're like, oh, I'm going to start a blog and I'm going to get rich, you're probably not going to be successful. You have to be very passionate about your topic, and you have to absolutely love what it is that you're writing.
Because people can tell when you're trying to make money from it.
Okay. Yeah.
Ishelle?
I tell you, just jump in, because it's worth the ride. Even if it's a long one or a short one, it's just worth it. There's so much you can gain.
Both feet. Rick?
Listen to what people like.
Okay. That was short.
Yeah, well, you said one sentence.
And I like that, and I'm listening to you.
Yeah, thank you.
Ricky?
Yeah, my one sentence would be to write from your heart. Be honest and open and transparent about who you are, and people. That's what people want.
I need to thank you all. I'm going to give you guys the all of the links to their blogs will be posted on our site. But Rebecca Coleman is at RebeccaColeman.ca. Ricky Shetty is at DaddyBlogger.ca. Rick Davidson, you got to poke around a little bit on Facebook. You have to go Facebook.com/WorkFromHomeWarrior. And finally, Ashelle is at MumFection.com. Thank you all so much for coming out today.
Thanks, Steve.
I'm Steve Dotto, and we're tuned in to Dotto Tech.
Do you have a comment or question for Dotto Tech? Visit our website at DottoTech.com and click on Contact Us. Dotto Tech is brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Now, back to Steve.
Joining me online now is Jeff Stanky. Jeff is one of the creators of Less Meeting, a software package, online software package that allows you to get control of your meetings in some pretty profound ways. I have been playing with this software for a while now, showing it at some of our workshops, and it's resonating with my audience, so I thought it would resonate with the radio audience. Jeff, how are you doing, sir?
I'm doing fantastic, Steve. Thanks for having me on.
Now, you're in Atlanta, right?
You got it. I am.
Good stuff. Now, tell me about the genesis of Less Meeting. Where did you what caused you guys to think that there was a market for meeting software?
We knew that there was a market for software because we needed it ourselves. Our team is a group of former and sometimes still current IT consultants, so project managers, part of the delivery process. And, you know, we, as consultants, we were involved in a bunch of different meetings with our clients. And, you know, this is with clients across industries. And, you know, we just felt this pain everywhere we went in terms of just the sheer volume of meetings, as well as the kind of the ineffective and disorganized way that meetings were being run and planned and followed up on. And so we you know, as consultants, we set out to fix this problem for ourselves. You know, we built a solution that solved our needs. And what we found is that our clients loved it. You know, they were looking for something that was better than, you know, an ad hoc Excel sheet stored out on a shared drive somewhere, and they loved it, and so it kind of took off from there and turned into a tool of its own.
I was kind of thinking back, and about 15 or 20 years ago, meeting etiquette and meeting training was in vogue. I can remember when I was doing my very first TV series at the Knowledge Network, they had people coming through and training everybody on effective meetings, and they followed this format of meetings, and then that all went away. And I'm wondering if the BlackBerry was the demise of the meeting, as senior managers got their hands on these devices and decided that they could multitask, be rude, not pay attention in the meeting, and all of a sudden meetings went to hell in a handbasket, and we have this dog's breakfast that we're left with today.
You know, it's interesting you say that. I mean, at the end of the day, most of the things you should be doing in the meeting, you know, none of these are particularly groundbreaking. They're not earth-shattering. Everybody knows in general what they should be doing. What is the challenge is actually doing what you know you should be doing. And that's kind of where we go with Less Meeting, is we try to make all those best practices as easy to follow. You know, there are so many distractions, and your attention is getting grabbed in so many different ways, and there's so much more quantity of information now than there was, you know, 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. And so we help give you a grasp on all of that.
And the concern that I have is it's just respect for time. People do not respect how much it costs their enterprise to have a meeting, and wasted time, and, you know, in not having proper outcomes and objectives. So, you know, entrenching those sorts of outcomes and goals in a piece of software and articulating them before the meeting, that alone is a great practice. So let's just walk through what your software does, basically. So it's available as both a web client, and you can also plug into Outlook, right?
Absolutely. We're on the web. We have an Outlook client. We actually integrate with any calendar. So whether it's our Outlook client, our Google Calendar integration, or you know, our CC feature, we sync to whatever calendar you're using, which lets you the power there. So it lets you sync all of your meetings from whatever calendar you're already using into Less Meeting. So you don't have to do any extra work. You just hook it up, all your meetings show up in the Less Meeting, and then you can start taking notes. One of the things on Less Meeting is that we really connect the pre-meeting process, the in-meeting, and the afterward all together.
And that's where it all begins, with the pre-meeting process. So if I now configure my meetings in Less Meetings, which I'm doing, so before I have a book a meeting with somebody, instead of just inviting them in an email or in a Google Calendar, in a calendar invitation, I open my Less Meeting interface and I type in an agenda, a rough agenda, which attaches time, which allows us to set how much time we expect to spend in the meeting, but it also prepares them for some meeting outcomes, which all goes in their meeting invitation, so they see it in the notes field.
Yeah, it's kind of a crazy concept that you actually get the agenda before the meeting so you can start planning. You can say, hey, do I actually need to do anything to get ready? Or do I even need to be there?
Yes, and also the thing I like about it is the time that you assign to each of the topics in order to stay on time in the meeting. Because so many times you're in meetings with long talkers. And this way here, because you actually start a timer when you start the meeting, the software begins when you begin the meeting, it starts to count things down. And so if somebody's just babbling on, sort of like I'm doing right now, you can say, hey, Steve, you have 30 seconds more because we've got to get on to the next topic.
You know, and to that point, I got to give a shout out to a lady by the name of Nicole Steinbach. And if you look her up under the 22-minute meeting, there's a great video out there. One of the things we learned from her is that you shouldn't let your meeting length drive your agenda. Instead, your agenda should drive your meeting length. So it's really important to, you know, take the time and put together an agenda, but then think about how long it's going to take, and then only after that, set your time. Otherwise, you're just not going to be scheduling your meeting right. You're going to be wasting everybody's time.
It's all about moving the ball farther downfield, isn't it?
Yep, progress.
There you go. So to that point, each of the agenda items, as you're in the meeting, there's actually kind of two ways, I guess, you can go about it. Is you either one person can take notes within the meeting, but if multiple people have access to your account or have signed up for your service, we can actually all see in a dynamic document the meeting notes being taken and contribute to them.
Yeah, it's fully collaborative. Think Google Docs for your meetings. You know, you have this page where everybody can add content. We can brainstorm as a group. Or if you have a traditional meeting environment, you can have, you know, the meeting leader running the meeting with the note taker taking the notes, but everybody can see the notes as they're being taken in real time, which helps avoid issues and conflicts and just discrepancies that might come up otherwise if everybody's doing it on their own.
Now, as you're taking the notes, you can assign different preset outcomes to each of the agenda items. They can be done as a decision that are earmarked as a decision, but you can also create tasks out of it.
Yeah, and really those are the kind of the meat of the whole meeting, pardon the pun there. But action items, you know, meetings are about progress and driving outputs and moving things forward, and action items are the best way to do that. So we build a whole mechanism into not just creating the action item in the meeting, but then the whole follow-up process. You know, less meetings going to follow up for you to make sure those action items get done, so you no longer have to, you know, be that nagging person checking up with your team, you know, are you done yet, are you done yet, are you done yet? Less meeting is going to do that for you.
Now, where do those action items, at the end of the meeting, I'm kind of going to fast forward a bit. At the end of the meeting, there's a consolidation where everybody gets sent an email, which we'll talk about a little bit more in the future, in a few minutes, I mean. But the action items that are created as tasks and to-dos, how do they resolve into your own personal productivity suite?
So they're going to integrate with whatever, you know, if you're using Outlook Tasks or Google Tasks, they'll integrate into whatever way you use to manage your tasks. But in addition to that, really what it's doing is it's centralizing all your actions from all of your meetings in a single place. So you get for example, you'll get a daily digest in your inbox every morning that's going to say, hey, these are the tasks that are most important that you need to get done right now, to kind of give you a way to manage that flood of information.
So everybody in the meeting who is given tasks, and especially ones that are date sensitive, is going to be then alerted that they have responsibilities coming out of that meeting in two places. One, they're going to receive a daily email, but also it's going to appear in their own task list.
You got it.
Good stuff. So we've gone through now the meeting. You've taken all of the notes, and the end of the meeting, communicating what happened in the meeting. That's, to me, this might be the second biggest strength that you guys have.
Yeah, it's the capability that the second you walk out of that meeting, everybody who is in the meeting, and actually anybody who maybe might not have even been able to make it but is still interested, they're going to get an email, a detailed summary with everything that happened. So there's no longer any waiting a day for somebody to send out the minutes, or even, you know, waiting forever, you know, mm-hmm. The minutes never get sent. It's an automatic email that just gets shut off the second the meeting ends, and it really helps close that information gap, that information loop of what actually happened in the meeting. You'll find something interesting is that once that starts happening and once your organization gets that practice down, you'll find that it's much easier to start declining meetings you don't need to be at, because you know that those notes are going to be there and you know that you're going to get them. That's a really a powerful change in an organization once you can kind of make that step.
The other thing that happens there is the meeting notes, depending on what format you choose. You can choose them to save them as a PDF or as a Word document. You can also have them automatically posted into a corporate wiki or onto into an Evernote account or into a Dropbox folder. You can have them posted somewhere so that they now become part of a corporate asset, as it were.
Absolutely. That's exactly what it is. And we want to that information in the meetings is very important to your team, and you want to be able to do something with it, and we give you that option.
And to that end, each meeting that you've taken with that same group, when you're in a new meeting, you can refer back to the old meeting notes without having to say, oh, did you bring notes from last meeting? They're all there.
Yeah, I've heard of that. We call that the Groundhog Day meeting problem, where you're like, what did we talk about last time? And you keep doing the same thing. Yeah, we link all your meetings together. So if you, let's say you're meeting about a, you know, a particular project, and each time you meet about that project, you know, you're one click away from, you know, all the notes from your last meeting, so you can easily, you know, dig up whatever that that thing is you need to look up.
So you can j'accuse you. You were supposed to do something. J'accuse. Yes.
Yep, exactly.
Good stuff. Now, the pricing.
Yeah, so it's a team-oriented product, and what that means is, you know, our pricing is team-based. For $59 a month, you're going to get 10 licenses. You can go ahead and purchase a yearly pack, which will give you 2 months free. And you really can scale up and down within, you know, within your team, whether you want to start with as little as 10 users all the way up to above 100. So it's really up to you, you know, finding a package that works for your team size.
And if you're in a large team that not everybody has to take notes, you could go with, less licenses than your actual employees. But you have to have people that then are assigned to be managing all the meetings.
Yep. And kind of some of the distinguishing features is that anybody can receive the minutes. Anybody can assign action items. You can get unlimited meetings. All of that is unlimited. Really, the only restriction is how many people can actually get in there and take notes.
Take notes during the meeting. So how many concurrent sessions there are, kind of. And there's exactly. There's a free trial. People can play with it and start it out. How long does the trial last for?
The trial is 30 days for free access, all access to all the features. And then the other piece to mention is the whole mobile app. We have iOS, iPhone, and iPad apps, and those are 100% free all the time.
Oh, I haven't even played with those. I'll have to take a look at them. That'll be good.
Yeah.
Jeff, thanks so much. This product, I think, has the power to really change corporate cultures to a certain extent. If you do feel like you're losing a lot of time in meetings, or you're not coming out of them as organized, or with the kind of action items and as we say, moving the ball downfield, this is a package that is simple to use. It doesn't ask you to follow any one particular philosophy around how you actually run your meeting. It just documents them and basically communicates what happens in the meeting far more effectively. And if you do follow it, though, you will end up being a little bit just more efficient in the meeting itself as well.
You bet. Well, thanks, Steve. I mean, our mission statement is to improve the world's meetings, one step at a time. So that's where we're heading.
Jeff Stanky is with Less Meeting. There'll be links, of course, on our website.
Thanks for Dotto
Tech. Today,
visit our website at DottoTech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Contact us. Dotto Tech is brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Now, back to Steve.
Joining me online now is Julian Saunders from London Drugs. Julian, you're telling me that my Wi-Fi wireless network is hopelessly out of date because I still have a 2-year-old router.
Well, it was fine 2 years ago, but with the way routers go, sometimes a 2-year-old router just won't cut it.
Oh gosh. Okay. So what's the story in the world of Wi-Fi?
Well, there's a new wireless standard. It's called wireless AC. So there's a group that makes all the speeds and feeds of how Wi-Fi works standard. So that's how other devices can all talk to each other. They have had many standards in the past, and the one that's been out, the kind of standard that's been out for speed for now has been wireless N.
Yeah, and that followed G, right? G was
right.
Before. Why don't they follow a logical progression?
Honestly, I don't know. But
so we're going from G to N to A.
Yep. Yeah. They actually did B.
Yeah.
B G A N, and now we have the new wireless AC, is what it's called. So I remember it like wireless air conditioning.
That's what I was thinking too, air conditioning. But somebody should give these naming people a smack upside of the head. I'm just saying.
Well, that's why there's people like the staff at London Drugs to kind of help it make sense, because sometimes seeing all these numbers and speeds don't really mean anything, because it doesn't really matter if you get the best gas and you put it in the lousiest car. It's not going to make your engine go any quicker.
So we have two issues in the average household. One is speed. For streaming to your television or other devices, if you're watching Netflix or using other things. That's issue one. But issue number two, which is probably related, is range. What does AC do for those two things?
Well, AC has a special way of using two antennas. So instead of using just one type of radio wave that just gets beamed out, it has a second faster one on a different frequency that's a cleaner, clearer signal. So it helps punch through interference that's caused by the whole growth of wireless devices. Even non-wireless devices that you might not think of, like microwave ovens and coffee pots and blenders, actually create distortion on the wireless frequency that's on 2.4 gigahertz. That's that bandwidth gets very cluttered very quickly. Cellular phones, power lines, and a whole other range of stuff cause issues on it. So it uses 2.4 and 5 gigahertz. Now, that's been out before for wireless N, but wireless AC uses it in a whole different way. It takes the slower, older bandwidth, and it sends it out to detect where all the devices are. Then it uses the faster, cleaner 5 gigahertz, and it finds the device's physical locations, and then it makes the area where it's trying to send Wi-Fi to stronger. So it basically helps shape the wave towards the device, causing it to punch through more things.
Okay.
And it'll change in the real world. That's one of the reasons you don't typically see, you know, this is how many feet this router will go, or you can do 100 devices on it. It'll change based on a lot of conditions, including the stuff that's around you. So if you're in a house with only two wireless devices, you'll get a huge range. If you're in a high-rise apartment that's all concrete, you'll cover just your unit and maybe your patio. So that's why they don't want to fool you into thinking a brand new expensive router will give you all of this. Really, the big advantage for most people will be how it finds the device and then punches out a stronger wave to it, and how it can optimize the connections for what they're doing.
Okay, so now in our home, for example, I use an Apple AirPort. I've got my AirPort base station, then I've got a repeating station. I've got an Apple AirPort Express that amplifies the signal to get to things like my Apple TV.
Right.
How many of those components do I have to change out to take advantage of wireless AC?
Well, depending on why you need the repeater, you might not even need it. You would just have to replace your router with a new wireless AC, which are available from D-Link, Linksys, and even the new AirPort from Apple. And they would give you the same speed that you have right now, because the other part of the mix is the card inside of the device that is getting the signal. So the receiver also needs the new wireless AC to take full advantage of the speed. But you can get a better wireless coverage on the current wireless N stuff that you have with a new wireless AC adapter, depending on a few things.
So things like your AirPort or your Apple TV don't have the capability. So I guess the newer ones will have that wireless networking built in. But the old one, so it's basically you get some gain by replacing your main wireless router, but over time you're going to probably want to upgrade all of the components on the system.
Right, yeah, and if your two-year-old router is working for you, I wouldn't say go out and buy a brand new AC, you know, because you've got a fairly good quality one. A lot of people have cheap routers, you know, they've been using them for a few years. They might be wireless N that can go up to 150 megabits per second, but the new wireless AC would be a great way to future-proof yourself. The other advantage that AC has is it has the ability to do prioritizing the traffic in a whole new way. That's been out for a long time. So the idea is with prioritizing is it says, okay, this device is watching Netflix, this device is on Skype, this one's just checking its email, and this one's idle doing some system updates. And it takes the Skype connection, puts it at the very top for sending and receiving. It takes the Netflix device and it puts it one step down, so it still gets more of the bandwidth. And then it gives the other two computers that aren't doing that much a lower amount of traffic.
Okay. And now, what's the price tag on these routers?
They started around $140 on promotional prices. There's one from D-Link that's regular price is $169. And it also has all the stuff that you'd like for sharing devices, so a USB port for hard drives and printers.
Okay, and the new Apple AirPort also has supports AC.
Right, yeah, and there's a couple of Linksys ones that have really good apps for parental control. So for all the parents out there with kids that have multiple devices, the Linksys ones give you the speed, and there's a little app or a web site that you use that you can quickly and easily control what the kids are up to. So it's a great question to ask if you come in looking for a router. Ask how you can control your kids on it too, because it makes that whole process really painless.
So the idea is you can start upgrading with wireless AC. Once you put the router in, if you do decide to upgrade, then you can determine which of the other components are needed as you go along. But bottom line is it will give us a cleaner signal to more devices and prioritize them as well.
That's right, yeah. And it it even does the same speed wired and wireless if you buy a matching receiver for your computers. So if your internet needs are very high, you can get almost the same speed that you get on a wire with wireless AC.
Oh, there we go. Okay, thanks so much, Julian.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
So, Art, did our conversation with the mommy and daddy bloggers make you feel like, A, becoming a mommy or a daddy?
I think I'm ready for parenthood.
Are you?
Yeah, if a baby just sort of dropped in my lap.
I have to give you kudos. You're pretty good with the kids.
I was a kid once myself, so I can relate.
And being from a Filipino family, it's family. I mean, there's always kids are never excluded from anything, right?
I think that's the best part, knowing that I could just drop my child off with a multitude of relatives.
I wasn't actually referring to you actually just avoiding your commitments and responsibilities, but
it's part of my culture, though.
Okay, okay,
yeah, so it's okay.
Fascinating, and it didn't seem to throw you off at all having the child crying somewhat.
No, not at all. It's a mommy and daddy blogger roundtable. If there was no crying children, those parents aren't doing something right.
Yeah. Now you kind of blog to a certain extent, don't you?
I had a blog. I took it down for a bit just to. I'm going to relaunch it.
It seems to me, as a comedian, you should have a blog because
Absolutely.
You should be commenting on everything that happens.
Well, then the whole before Twitter came out. And before Facebook turned into less of posting pictures and more of, putting out information, like a lot of comics now will put a link of a story that they see in the paper and then make a funny comment on it.
Mm-hmm.
My blog was my way of putting out information and commenting on what's going on in my life and what's going on around me. But now Twitter is kind of the 140 character version of the microblogging.
But it takes a different type of... It takes a different skill set to be funny in Twitter than it does in a blog that you can write that's 300 or 400 words.
You definitely have to learn how to cut the fat, as they say.
You can't paint quite as good a picture either sometimes. But I wonder if in your business, when there's so much competition that there's a fear of having your stuff lifted and stolen.
Oh, stealing jokes is huge. And mm-hmm. it, because of the internet world... You could easily search Canadian comedian and be in Los Angeles or just, you know, YouTube clips, blogs, Twitter. And because not everyone globally searches comedy, you can be a hilarious guy in your neck of the woods, in your small town, at your comedy club, and be taking jokes or taking ideas from anywhere around the world now.
Yeah. And I wonder how many are doing that.
I have a feeling that some people are.
Just becoming kind of a content amalgamator.
Well, the only people who get caught are the dumb ones who decide to steal from, you know, the Chappelles and the Dane Cooks and the big comics. Yeah,
but, you know, that's always been the case. I had a lot of friends that were comics as I was coming up myself, and I remember them talking about the fact that when they were in towns with certain big-name comics, how they would never do their A material if they knew that there's a good chance the guy was in the back of the room.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I think the toughest, the easiest half hour material you can write is the first half hour because mm-hmm. you had a lifetime to write it. Now you've got a year, 2 years to write another new hour, and it's not as easy.
Mm-hmm.
So you start you know, you have, when you have brain blocks and you have roadblocks on writing, you kind of have to find out ways to overcome that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's interesting, certainly from the comic perspective. I'm fascinated by the business side of the bloggers. We didn't get into that as much as I would have liked to, because I was dying, of course, as you were dying to have me ask us, just how much money do you make off of the darn blog? But that just is not polite, Art, and we can't do it even though we want to. Although we should probably break with convention at some point. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, from there, and the other thing, which we're going to have to do another story on the economics of blogging, because I want to know, and now I'm sorry that I didn't ask, and everybody listening will be sorry I didn't ask as well, is where their ethics, where, you know, somebody contacts you and says, write about our product, we'll give you money, and it's not a product you like.
Mm, absolutely. So
how do you make that? I used to have to make that decision on the TV show all the time.
And where did your ethics lie?
Oh, how much money? It was situational ethics completely. If it was just a little bit of money and it was a crappy product, there was only three times that I can think of where there were products that I did not like that I could not find merit in.
That's the thing. I think the best part about blogging or a personal review is that as long as you can find a few things, you kind of focus on the things that you really like about it and kind of, you know, you don't talk as much about the things that you don't like.
If you're reading somebody's blog and recognize the fact that it could be a paid-for blog and they open with the packaging is very pretty, you know that it might not be a product that really they're 100% engaged with.
I'm curious. I would assume that part of what they consider kickback from their blog comes from getting products, you know, free dinners. And because, I mean, in theory, that is money.
Yeah.
I mean, if you were going to be a parent.
Oh, and you have to claim that now on your taxes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you were going to get, you know, an iPad from Apple or a Jolly Jumper or something, those are things you would have to pay out of pocket. So it kind of is income.
There are certain things that you really want to get. And there are other things that you kind of go, okay, you know, I've got a vacuum cleaner and somebody else has given me another vacuum cleaner. That's nice, but it's not. You know, it's not worth the $600. I turned down a lot of hardware because I don't want it on my books, and it's, you know, I don't need another printer, and so, you know, I would have to claim it. So it's a fascinating new economy that we're dealing with, and blogging is just one part of it. And we will continue to explore all the digital sides of that new world here on Dottotech. On behalf of Art Factor, I need to thank all of our guests for coming in today, and of course you for listening. You can find links to everything we talked about today at Dottotech.com. I'm Steve Dotto. Thanks for tuning in. See you next week.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.